This is Lucy and Susan Letcher, otherwise known as Isis and Jackrabbit, reading from their Appalachian Trail memoir, The Barefoot Sisters, Southbound. In this podcast, they read a section from the beginning of the book. This is Jackrabbit.
Chapter 1, The Wilderness. A sudden gust of wind lashed my face with rain and ice crystals. Just ahead of me on the trail, my sister Lucy picked her way through a maze of granite boulders dotted with sparse lichens. I imagined how the two of us would look to a passerby. Two tall women in black pants and teal Gore-Tex jackets, wisps of blonde hair plastered to the side of our faces, bulging packs, bare feet. Crazy. The low clouds and sleet lifted for a moment, revealing the final climb ahead. Perhaps half a mile, and we would be standing on Baxter Peak, the highest point of Mount Katahdin. This would be the fourth time I had reached that peak. The climb alone had always given me a sense of strength and accomplishment. But this time, the summit of Katahdin would be more than just another mountain. It would be the beginning of a long pilgrimage through pristine forests, hedgerows, national parks, mosquito-ridden swamps, through towns and cities over back roads and major highways into a Superfund site. It would be a journey across the rumpled spine of the eastern mountains and an equally demanding passage across our own interior landscapes. Although I did not know it at the time, my sister and I would devote more than 15 months of our life to the Appalachian Trail. We stood for a moment before the venerable signpost marking the summit. Scored with graffiti and the constant onslaught of weather, it stands perhaps 3 feet high, a wooden A-frame painted Forest Service brown with recessed white letters. Katahdin, 5,268 feet, northern terminus of the Appalachian Trail. Below this were a few waypoints. Thoreau Spring 1.0, Katahdin Stream Campground 5.2. At the bottom of the list, Springer Mountain, Georgia, 2160.2. More than 2,000 miles. It was simply a number, too large and incomprehensible to have any bearing on me. The farthest I had ever walked in a day was 10 miles, and that was with a day pack. Now I was contemplating a journey of months, covering thousands of miles. All of a sudden, there on the summit, with the clouds screaming past us, it didn't seem like such a great idea. I turned to my sister, half expecting to see the same doubt mirrored in her face. But her eyes were shining, and she smiled with an almost feral intensity. It was a look I would come to know all too well over the next year and a half, and it meant, I'm going to do this, and no one had better try to stop me. "We're really doing this," she shouted over the wind's howl and the lashing rain. "We're hiking the Appalachian Trail." And with that, we turned to head down the mountain. We found the first white blaze on a rock near the signpost, a swath of white paint about 2 by 6 inches. There was nothing remarkable about it. It was just a streak of pigment on the rock, worn by the weather, but we both stopped briefly to lay a hand on it. We knew that we would be following these blazes from rock to rock, tree to tree, all the way to Georgia. The rain picked up as we descended below treeline. The cold stones underfoot gave way to mud that, ankle-deep in places, made a satisfying squish-ploop sound, and the rough roots of spruce and fir stretched across the trail. It was noticeably warmer in the forest, where the trees blocked the wind. Conifers on the high slopes gave way to maple, birch, and beech, their leaves still touched with the delicate yellow-green of spring. Clouds of black flies crawled into our hair and into the cuffs of our clothing, leaving streaks of blood and lumpy welts whenever they bit. As I walked, I thought about the last few weeks before this cold, rainy summer solstice. 10 days earlier, I had earned my diploma from Carleton College in Minnesota, with a double major in music and biology. The next day, I had flown to Bangor, Maine, driven an hour to my mother's house on the coast, and started packing. I had played the piano in all my spare time, not knowing when I would get a chance again. In the evenings, I took long walks with my sister. Lucy and I had barely seen each other in the past 4 years, except for vacations. Now we were planning to spend 6 months in each other's company. We reached the campground just at dusk and pitched our tent under a picnic shelter. Both of us were too exhausted to say much. We hung the sopping wet jackets and pants over the rafters to drip dry, cooked our supper over a smoky fire, and drifted off to sleep to the sound of rain drumming on the tin roof. My last thought before I sank into dreaming was this: at least we won't have to worry about wet boots in the morning. My whole body groaned with the effort of lifting my full pack in the morning. Besides our regular gear, tent, sleeping bag and liner, sleeping mat, stove, water bottles, med kit, changes of clothing, we were carrying 12 days' worth of food. After Katahdin, the trail traverses the 100-mile wilderness, a 119-mile stretch of remote forest with no access to towns. We wanted to be well prepared. We left most of our gear at the foot of the mountain while we hiked Katahdin, since the steep, broken rocks are hard enough to negotiate even with a day pack. I'd thought I was in good shape. In college, I'd been running every morning, and I had just gained my black belt in Taekwondo. But backpacking was something else. A friend who had finished the Appalachian Trail several years earlier had told me, "Nothing gets you in shape for the trail short of putting on your pack and walking." Damn, she was right, I thought grimly as I lurched down the trail. We had decided to try hiking barefoot because it was the way we had always walked since we were kids, in the mountains near our home on the coast of Maine. We loved the sense of connection to the ground that barefoot hiking gave us. Every surface felt different underfoot. Granite, shale, pine needles, thick mud. We didn't want to sacrifice that link with the earth. I was not accustomed to hiking barefoot with so much weight on my back, though. At first, my passage was slow and painstaking. The rough bark roots, mud, and soft spruce needles felt good underfoot, but sharp rocks and sticks seemed to lurk in unexpected places. The tiny triangular scales of spruce cones stuck into the pads of my feet. I kept my eyes on the trail for the most part. Unless I get better at this barefoot thing, I thought, I'm going to see every rock and tree root between here and Georgia. When I did glance up, the woods had a sort of minimalist beauty, with the bold straight trunks of spruce and pine splitting the middle ground into rectangles of green light. Everywhere the vista was different, but always a variation of the same theme. Black spruce, red spruce, white pine, balsam fir, red maple, moose maple, paper birch. Mossy boulders, the soft orange of fallen spruce needles, dapples of light and shade. We passed small clear tarns, and in the midday calm, each one bore an inverted green-gold forest, a deep blue reflected sky shot through with small ripples. At Daisy Pond Campsite in Baxter State Park, the official checkpoint for hikers starting the Appalachian Trail in Maine, we slung off our packs on the grass beside the ranger station and knocked on the camouflage green door. A ranger in khakis and a Smokey the Bear hat handed us two questionnaires and motioned us to sit in the white plastic armchairs in front of his desk. "You guys through hiking?" We had heard the term before, hiking an entire long-distance trail in one stretch, but all of a sudden it applied to us. Once again, I thought of the impossibly large number of miles to Georgia on the sign atop the mountain. I thought of the impossibly heavy pack sitting outside. I grinned, an expression probably not unlike my sister's wild you-can't-stop-me smile of the day before, and answered in the affirmative. We filled out the surveys, noting our ages, 22 and 25, names and address, our mothers, emergency contacts. For occupation, I put student, for lack of a better idea. There was a space at the bottom of the form for trail name. I knew hikers chose names like CB handles, something to identify themselves in the trail community. My sister wrote Isis in her delicate script, a name she'd earned years earlier on another adventure. I hesitated for a moment and blocked in Jackrabbit in capitals. It was the only nickname that had ever stuck with me, given by a friend in Taekwondo. "You jump like Jackrabbit," he said in a fake Karate Kid accent, and it became the name I used in our impromptu Saturday sparring classes. It seemed only fitting to carry it with me on this journey as a reminder of what I had learned and who I had become. It made me feel strong, invincible in that moment. Susan could have doubts and second thoughts, but Jackrabbit was through hiking the Appalachian Trail. The ranger asked about our plans and our previous wilderness experience. He seemed satisfied with our tales of adventure growing up in the Maine woods and exploring the seashore and lakes. We showed him the med kit, emergency blankets, 12 days rations. He took the questionnaires and entered our names in a large book. As we left Daisy Pond, he came out on the lawn and wished us luck. "I don't say this to many people, but I think you've got what it takes to make it. You guys know what you're doing out there. Just keep your heads about you. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. It's about all you got to do." We thanked him and turned to go. "Hey, you guys going barefoot?" We turned and nodded. As long as it's comfortable, Isis said. As long as it's fun, I added. I thought the ranger was about to retract his confidence in our ability and sanity, but he smiled. There are few that do that. I don't know how. Well, if it works for you, more power to you.
This is Isis.
Enthusiasm carried me 4 or 5 miles past Daisy Pond, and then the 55 pounds in my pack caught up with me. After a snack break, Jackrabbit got up first and started walking. I struggled to keep up with her, half running, feeling as though I couldn't breathe properly. It seemed that she never looked back to see if I was behind her. We'd planned to hike 14 miles that day, all the way to Herdbrook Lean-To. I was pretty sure I wouldn't make it. I imagined my sister setting up camp, beginning to worry, while I staggered along in the darkness, miles behind her. This thought brought an enormous wave of self-pity washing over me. I started to cry. Not a good idea. Crying made my already labored breathing 10 times more difficult. At the turn of the trail ahead of me, Jackrabbit had stopped to talk with 2 hikers. I hurried to catch up to tell her that I wouldn't make it as far as Herdbrook and wanted to stay at Abel Bridge Campground, some 4 miles closer. The men she was talking to turned out to be northbounders, thru-hikers who had started in Georgia, now nearly finished with their 2,160-mile journey. Thin, sun-browned, and wind-burned, one heavily bearded and one with about 5 days' worth of stubble, they carried packs that seemed hardly big enough to fit one decent picnic. Their glances flickered past us toward Katahdin as they spoke. I asked them how far to Abel Bridge Campground. "Abel Bridge? You're almost there," the bearded one answered. My shoulders slumped with relief as far as they could in the complex interlacing of pack straps. I stared hard at the bend in the trail ahead of us, hoping to see the corner of a building through the trees. "Yeah," said the other. "It's only a mile, mile and a half, I'd say." They wished us a good hike and were gone, vanishing into the forest as easily as deer. A whole mile? Maybe even a mile and a half to go? Suddenly, the belt of my pack felt like a circle of fire around my hips. The black flies and mosquitoes that had been swarming around us all day became a furious humming in my head. I sat down in the middle of the trail. "It'd be easier to hike if you'd stop crying," Jackrabbit said. I started to sob. With a sigh, she sat down beside me. She opened her water bottle and offered me a drink. I refused to take my head net off. I drank through the mosquito netting. After 10 minutes of patient persuasion, Jackrabbit convinced me to lift the net up far enough to eat a few bites of an energy bar. Then she pulled me to my feet. The last mile to Abel Bridge was just as slow and painful as I expected it to be, but one step at a time, I made it. Jackrabbit walked beside me all the way. Taking a shower at the campground that night, I discovered dark bruises as big as the palms of my hands, one over each of my hip bones, and a wide swath of rash across the small of my back. There were sores on my shoulders, and the tops of my hands and feet were so thoroughly stippled with mosquito bites that they felt like the skin of cucumbers. Strangely, this physical evidence of the pain I'd been feeling encouraged me. "So, I'm not such a wimp as I thought I was this afternoon," I said to myself. "All these bruises and I still made it this far. Maybe I will get to Georgia." It was 3 full days before I was able to take my mind off my pack weight, but I did keep going. As I walked, I ran through an inventory of all the food and gear I was carrying, telling myself the usefulness of each item in turn. When this didn't help, I went over all the food I'd eaten so far. 1/2 pound of oatmeal, 1/4 pound of peanuts, an energy bar and some couscous. My pack must be a whole pound lighter than yesterday, I thought. As a last resort, I let my mind dwell on the pound of dark chocolate I had stashed away in the bottom of my food bag. Whatever else I had to lug along with it, there was at least 1 pound that was worth the effort.